Bay, WGBW, home for Matt Nair on air.
Broadcasting live statewide from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who hates shaking hands, Pete Schwabba.
Hello, Wisconsin. How about this? The Friday night before one of the coolest weekends of the year for many reasons. It's a long weekend, but it's also a time we remember fallen soldiers and those who gave their lives for our country. And this is our last show before a nice long weekend. Amanda, how are you?
You know, I'm not too bad. Not too shabby.
Not too shabby. Okay. Amanda is Amanda Nimmer is sitting in for Conrad. K-Man is still in Italy. Is it me or does it seem like he's been gone a month? Maybe I've just been all over the place. I don't know.
Are you forgetting him already?
No. How could I forget that lovable mug? Amanda is producing the show. Thank you. Thank you for stepping in, Amanda. Much appreciated. Great to have you with me tonight. And you could say thank you.
You're welcome. Thank okay. you, I guess. I don't know.
No, you don't have to thank me. I'm the one that should be thanking you. You should be home right now with your kids, right?
Yeah, you should be, but that's okay. Yeah, this is another way to spend a Friday night.
You don't seem too broken up about that. It is, and it's the Friday night, as I mentioned, before a long weekend. And we are airing statewide from beautiful downtown Green Bay here at City Deck Landing. So fun to have you with me. We're going to talk about some movies tonight. We'll talk about summer blockbusters. I'm going to get a couple things off my chest. Terry Barr is going to join us to talk about Bratfest. What do you know about Bratfest, Amanda?
I went a couple years ago. Yeah. And I went, so this is right when my fiance and I started dating. And we went solely because this band I had never heard of was performing there called Royal Bliss.
Oh.
And they played right before Bret Michaels did. And we went there for that. And in my mind, I was expecting like kind of like a world Brat Festival.
Oh.
But it was a little bit smaller than that, but it's still a really good time, and the food is delicious.
That's ambitious. A world Brat Fest.
I don't know.
Where was it?
It's down in Madison.
That's what I thought. Okay. Yeah. It's not like the Whammies where it goes to a different city every year.
No, I think it's always down in Madison. It's sponsored by Johnsonville, I believe.
Very nice. Well,
don't quote me on that.
I won't. I will not hold you to that, even though it's on record now. I have a very fun show for you guys tonight. I have a really cool guest I'm very excited to interview. Coming in at 7:30, Brian Eich will be here. He is a bona fide war hero and an Army veteran and the winner of the Bronze Star for his time over in Afghanistan, where he tried to rescue a police officer who was on our side, and Brian got shot and then was rescued himself by a medic. And his story has been told on Netflix. It's a film called Father, Soldier, Son. It is absolutely incredible. And the emotions you get watching this film are just, I was not prepared for it. So I'm very excited to have Brian in studio. We'll talk to him about his experience on the film. It's not easy having a documentary crew follow you around. I've never had the pleasure, but I know a lot of documentary filmmakers, and they, by and large, say, Some of them have said they feel bad for their subjects because it's a lot to ask of people to let you film their lives. So we'll talk to Brian about that. And I can already tell that's going to be a really insightful interview. Terry Barr will be here in the second hour at 8:35. Like I said, reporting live. We break all the big stories here on Nightlight. And I know everyone is on pins and needles wondering what is happening at Bratfest tonight. Probably a lot of shoveling in the way of food. A lot of eating of the brats.
A lot of musical entertainment.
Oh, there's music there?
Yes.
I just picture a big circle of people eating brats and talking about the brats.
You know what? That's not a bad time in my book.
you don't need to ruin it by playing music.
Put a bonfire in the middle. That's all it's missing. And it's no different than what everyone's doing this Memorial Day.
That is a beautiful Wisconsin Friday night. Yeah, that's very true. A lot of us will be doing that all weekend. Today is Bob Dylan's birthday, and I'm not trying to start anything. A lot of people consider him the greatest American songwriter. Maybe he is. It's all subjective. You don't know. I think Peebo Bryson is number one. I can't, Can't even say that with a straight face. That was a line from Modern Family. Phil Dunphy thought Peebo Bryson was the greatest American singer or songwriter. So Bob Dylan turns, I think, 82 today. And a lot of people think he is the best songwriter of our generation or possibly ever. I think there's a lot of people in the running for that. And I'm not a musical expert. I play guitar poorly. I know that doesn't give me the authority to say things like this, but I'm going to say just by sheer volume of music and the kinds of music he makes, to me, my money's on Bruce Springsteen. He can do anthem rock. He's sold out football stadiums. He can do an intimate setting, have a Netflix special where he sings ballads, and he could put out albums like Nebraska and Devils and Dust. And the songs are so beautiful, and the characters he creates and writes about are so beautiful. But he also has these just kick-ass, gutsy songs like Badlands and Born to Run. Like, and he's 75, and he's still churning them out. I saw him last summer at Wrigley Field, did 3 hours. Now, he got sick and exhausted because he's 75 and jumping around and playing three-hour concerts, but A for effort, man. I say Springsteen. You could make an argument, Willie Nelson. Last week, he was in Madison. Bob Dylan.
Phil Collins.
Yeah, you put Phil Collins up there?
Mostly because I grew up watching a lot of Disney films, but yes. Phil Collins, Elton John, right. That's my childhood
Elton
right there.
Elton John, love it. Love Phil Collins too. You know, when he had Genesis, then he went out on his own. You could make an argument for a lot of people. Some people have said John Mellencamp. You could put U2 up there. I don't know, Johnny Cash maybe? There's a lot of people you could put up there as best American songwriter. And none of this is scientific. I like Springsteen, like his message, like how prolific he is. The amount of songs he has created is incredible. I don't know if that's been matched. So he's my vote. Who is yours? That's our question tonight. Who, in your opinion, is the greatest American songwriter? 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Always fun to read your texts on the air and get you guys involved in the show. That's what we do here. We have fun talking movies and TV and music and all the kind of cool stuff that brings us together. So let's make this show like all the others, and let's hear from you guys. That'll be fun.
What's the question? One more time.
One more time. Who is the greatest American songwriter? You say Phil Collins. That's Amanda's vote.
A little bit, yeah.
Okay. I'll own it. That's great. Good for you. I like Phil Collins. Listen, Take Me Home is one of my favorite songs ever. I love that song. Sherry, checking in on the stream. Good evening, Pete and Amanda. There is text, but I can't. I got a weird thing on my computer here. Oh, there we go.
That's okay.
There's text, but I can't see you. Is the stream down?
No, the stream's working.
Okay. Is Sherry's color television on the fritz? Oh, on Facebook, she says. Oh, now she's got us. Okay. Glad to have you with us, Sherry, as always. Do you want to tell people how they can watch in the stream, Amanda?
Yeah, so you guys can go to our Facebook page, go to Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. You can go to the Civic Media Facebook or Civic Media YouTube channel and watch it there, the WGBW Facebook page, or the WGBW Twitter, because I will not call it the other one.
I call it Twitter X. Like, I won't let Twitter go, X is stupid. That doesn't even mean anything.
I mean, if it is just that, what are you calling them now? I just X'd?
I'm going to X. Yeah. That could be, you mean drugs. That's what it sounds like.
That's what it sounds like.
Jeez. Tom from New Berlin says, you play guitar proudly. Well, I do, Tom, but I know my limitations. And I hate the bar chords. I'll muscle through them, but I'm not good at it. But when I sing in the shower, I'm amazing. Not at the hanging, at the soaping up part and getting myself clean. I'm very good at that. Tom also says, had a feeling. Oh, Neil Young. Okay. Yeah, you could put Neil Young up there for sure. I love that Neil Young song. Under Harvest Moon. Have you heard that, Amanda?
I bet I have.
Let's try to find that. That's
a great
song. Yeah. Take your time. No rush. It's a great tune. Yeah, that's a good one, Tom. Here are some songs from movies I saw on a recent list, and some of these I forgot came to us from the movies. Once again, movies give us amazing gifts. How Deep Is Your Love? The Bee Gees from Saturday Night Fever. Take My Breath Away. Top Gun. How about that? I forgot about that one. Kiss from a Rose by Seal. Never Ending Story 3. Never Ending Story. They shouldn't even put numbers. It's just never ending. It just is going to go on forever if they're consistent, right?
Just like The Song That Never Ends by Lamb Chop.
By Lamb Chop? Now you're saying Lamb Chop is the greatest American songwriter?
I mean, it's consistent, isn't it?
Somewhere Out There, Linda Ronstadt, James Ingram from American Tale. Wow, that's an oldie but a goodie. I Do It For You. Everything I do it for you. Brian Adams.
I was going to mention Brian Adams, but you said American.
All right, North American.
Okay. We got Jameson from Pennsylvania saying, I'll pass over The Boss, since mentioned. Greatest, So Hard, Remaining Three are Billy Joel, Tom Petty. And while I don't love his body of work, I have to add Bob Dylan, and his wife says Garth Brooks.
And then he says, we disagree. Don't disagree with your wife, Jameson. There's no right or wrong answer. So, you know, I think I love Tom Petty. I like Billy Joel. And I really like Bob Dylan, but I don't think any of them have been as prolific as Springsteen. But, you know, we all have our favorites.
I mean, as you said, art is subjective.
It's all subjective.
It's also, and I think it depends on the material too. I mean, you got the love ballads where they throw in the certain type of verbiage where if you're looking at it on paper, you're like, I don't understand this. But when you hear it sung, you can feel
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Great point. I like some Garth Brooks tunes. I don't know much Garth Brooks. I don't know much new country, but I like some of it when I hear it. It's on a lot where I live. It's either country music or headbanging metal. If you want to eat a 6-inch turkey sub at Subway in Marinette, you're going to have to listen to Quiet Riot. It's brutal. Oh, nice pull. It's a great song. You ever see the video?
No, I haven't.
Video's fantastic. That's not going to play as well on radio, though. All right, Brian Eich, a bona fide American hero, coming up at 7:35. Terry Barr in the second hour. This is Pete Schwabba in Nightlight on the Civic Media Network. Great to have you with me.
Just like children sleeping, we could dream this night away.
Air.
When we were strangers,
absolutely love this song. From the 920, Jim from Appleton says, great American songwriters. Woody Guthrie, yes. This land is your land. Pete Seeger, Bob Seeger, love Bob Seeger too. Love Bob Seeger and Tom Petty. You can't go wrong with any of these, really. Jim spelled Pete Seeger and Bob Seeger the same way, but they're not related. They're a little before your time, Amanda. A little before my time too.
Just
not
a
Bob
tad.
Seeger, not Bob Seeger. Bob Seeger. Here's a. I've told this story before, but I just love it. Bob Seeger was on the CBS Morning Show. And I used to have an issue when artists would sell their stuff for commercials. I'm just like, come on, man. It's art. Just, it is what it is. They asked Bob Seeger that. He said, what do you say to people who say you've sold out selling your songs? I think it was Chevy was Like a Rock. He sold Like a Rock to Chevy. And his answer was so great. He said, I think it saved a lot of jobs. That song on the Chevy commercials sold a lot of Chevy trucks. And he's a man of the people and a working man, and he saved a lot of jobs. And I'm like, wow, what the heck do I know? That was such a great answer. So that's our question tonight. Get involved in the conversation. And as always, you can comment on anything I'm talking about tonight. Love to hear your thoughts as the show progresses. What is your favorite, or who is your favorite, or who is the best? Amanda, help me out here. I'm in trouble.
Who is the greatest American songwriter?
Yeah.
Is it Jim Steinman? We will never know.
I know it is not Jim Steinman. Who is Jim Steinman?
Okay, so Jim Steinman actually wrote the song It's All Coming Back to Me Now, which was
oh, okay.
It was, I cannot remember the band that originally sang it, but they were a very small band way back in the day. Then Celine Dion sang it.
Yeah.
And then Meatloaf sued Jim to get the rights to sing the song because he wanted it. And Jim said, no, he's like, it's not right for you. I didn't do this for you. Celine's going to have it. And then he won the battle and then he got to do his own.
Why would he sue to be able to sing a song that he didn't write?
He was mad. He wanted it. Jim has written a lot of songs for Meatloaf, I believe.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That Jim style. Yeah, okay. It's coming back to me. It's all coming back to me now. See what I did there? Okay, I got to get something off my chest here. Do you get junk texts? You ever get those?
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know who this Yin person is, but I get texts probably twice a week. And every time it's the same. Yin, comma, secure your health coverage for 2024 before May ends. Enroll in a health plan now. Call blah, 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 reply to stop. I've tried replying stop, and then you swipe left, and it gives you the option to delete or delete report as junk. I delete report as junk twice a week, and I think they think that means please keep sending Pete this text.
It's opposite day over there.
I don't know who Yin is, but
what
Yin,
you got to do is you got to reply, and you got to be weird with it.
Yeah, I know. I should engage. But whoever this person is, they desperately need insurance, and the wrong person is getting the texts. I saw this. I thought this was kind of cool. The city of Detroit has not grown in 65 years. They have lost population. 65 years in a row. At one point, they had almost like 2 million people, and now it's like 650,000 people. That's a huge loss of population. They gained 1,800 residents between 2022 and 2023 for the first time in 65 years.
That's such an odd time frame. That's like, you know, still a little bit into COVID, post-COVID.
Oh, yeah. That's true. Well, maybe people went there. There's so many vacant buildings there. I'm telling
you. Housing prices down.
Exactly. And I've heard that Michigan in 20 years with climate change and all that is going to be the most populated, or it's going to be the biggest destination. So Detroit is going to make a big time comeback. If I had money, I'd invest in Detroit. Or Gary, Indiana, right in the water. That city's due for a comeback too.
Is that your Super Bowl champion prediction? Detroit Lions?
No. Well, maybe. I don't know. What do I know? If Green Bay can get through the draft next year, if this town of 100,000 people can somehow find a way to house 250,000 visitors, and they'll be spread out all over the place. But that's going to be a challenge. That'll be interesting. We're going to sit right here in this radio station and look out the window as people walk around looking to rent rooms. It's going to be insane.
You could rent your house out.
Yeah, I could. But what do I do then? Get a hotel for $3,000 because there's nowhere to go. A few more of those songs. Somewhere Out There did that one. Everything I Do. Just Called to Say I Love You. Stevie Wonder from The Woman in Red. You see that movie, Amanda?
I don't think so.
It's not too late. Call Me, Blondie, American Gigolo. Great song. Loved Blondie. Accidentally in Love from Counting Crows.
Love that one.
Do you? It's not ringing a bell right now. I got to be honest.
Have you seen Shrek?
Yeah. I mean, 20 years ago. I don't remember one of 20 songs that was in the movie. Boy, you got a real attitude tonight, Amanda. You know that? I've about had it. I'm telling you, I'm going to walk. I'm going to get Brian to come in here and host the show.
Oh, okay.
What if he was great? And they're like, Pete, thank you.
Pete, this was a great idea. Probably your best ever. Sorry to see you go.
As long as I get a taste, that's okay. I want something on the back end. We Don't Need Another Hero. Tina Turner, Mad Max, Beyond Thunderdome. That's a pretty good song.
We got a text that says, Carole King.
Okay. Oh, is the greatest songwriter.
Yes.
She's good. Love Carole King. Here's a song, if I never hear it again, it'll be too soon. Happy by Pharrell Williams from Despicable Me. That song was so overplayed. And I get sad when I hear it. That's how bad. I love how you turn the mic off when you laugh a minute. God forbid the show should pick up this laughter energy. I'm saying funny things.
Sorry. Yeah. I gotta squeak sometimes when I'm loud. No one wants to hear that.
That's okay. I made Conrad spit milk one night. Did he tell you that?
No, he did not. Was it on the board?
I don't think so. I might be making that up. I'm all right. Kenny Loggins from Caddyshack and somebody's baby, Jackson Brown from Fast Times at Ridgemont High. That is one of my all-time favorite films. That's a great song.
Jameson says Duke Ellington and Frank Sinatra should be added.
I don't know. Yeah, I would agree with that, Jameson, but I don't know that Sinatra, I know he wrote some songs, but the question is songwriter, and I don't know if Sinatra, like, just how many of those he wrote. Like, back then with the crooners, they had all these different songwriters, but I'd have to look into that. I know he didn't write them all, but I know he wrote some. Sherry, checking in on the stream, says Cat Stevens, Eric Clapton, On and On. Sherry also says Don McLean. Stacy Sue says, hi, Pete. Hi, Stacy. Great to have you with me tonight. And Stacy Sue says, "What? Oh, Carol King, you read that one. Did you read that one or off the text line?
I did read it off the text line.
Stacy Sue says, I was in Gary last year and saw the Jackson home. I've seen the Jackson 5 home, too. That is really cool to see. It's like you are seeing history. They raised 9 kids in this tiny home.
Oh, that poor mother.
Poor everybody. That's a lot of people. They've done well for themselves.
So Sinatra,
yeah.
To quick go back on that, Sinatra, yeah. He apparently did write or co-write a few songs like Fool to Want You, Mistletoe and Holly, Mr. Success, Peachtree Street, Take My Love.
Okay.
So just a couple.
He wrote some, so that's good. Tom from New Berlin says the Go-Go's, the only record written, produced, and performed by the same artist we got to beat number one. Is that true? I don't know. Is that a real thing? I'm not doubting you, Tom. I'm just asking. Okay. This is exciting, folks. Got a great guest coming up. Brian Eich will be here. That is coming up next on Nightlight with Pete Schwab. It's so much fun to have you guys with me tonight. Happy Friday, everybody.
My weariness amazes me. I am branded on my feet. I have no one to meet. And the ancient empty streets too dead for
Yeah, I put Dylan up there, no question. He's done well for himself. Terry Barr coming up later in the show. A live report from Bratfest. This is on the heels of Joey Chestnut announcing his retirement from eating hot dogs. We have Bratfest here in Wisconsin tonight. So we'll talk a little bit about Joey Chestnut maybe later, too. He's eaten over 10,000 hot dogs. I actually thought that sounded low because he's been doing it for 20 years. He's eaten 50 in one sitting in like less than whatever it was, 10 minutes or something like that.
I mean, he did say that he was going to retire because he really wanted to focus on his health. So you got to be curious what kind of repercussions 10,000 hot dogs in a short time span can have.
I think he tore an ACL once. He was eating so fast. Hey, great to have you with me. I don't know if you can hear that laughter, but that's my guest. He's here in studio, Brian Eich. How do people typically introduce you when you do shows like this?
Short, fat, one-legged guy?
I'm not going to say that. He's an Army veteran, a Bronze Star recipient, and a bona fide war hero, and the subject of the film Father, Soldier, Son on Netflix. It's crazy that this documentary was out there, Brian, and I had no idea. And it's been on Netflix for 4 years. Do people talk to you about it a lot? Do they want to know what that was like for you being the subject of a documentary?
Yeah, I mean, I get a lot of, well, thanks for having me, first off.
Oh, my pleasure.
I get a lot of questions like, how come I didn't know about this? But it came out during COVID.
Okay.
So, you know, there was no... We were supposed to go to New York, do this big red carpet, you know, red carpet thing. None of that ever happened. But the number one question I get asked is how they start filming you.
How did they find you? That's my first question.
So we were told, I was with the 10th Mountain Division. We were part of Obama's surge where they were sending the 30,000 over to Afghanistan over in 2010. And we were told, hey, there's going to be a combat camera crews from the New York Times. That's going to be embedded in our battalion. They're doing a series called A Year at War. And they may film you, they may not. Well, they found out I was a single parent at the time. So they said, hey, we want to film you. And family-friendly show, so I
radio, yeah, but yeah.
I said a few choice words, and I just said, you know, get the cameras out of my face.
Yeah.
But then they kind of sat me down and explained what they were trying to do, and I warmed up to it. So they started going to, my brother was watching my two boys in Wetoma, Wisconsin, and they filmed them out there, and they started filming me, and it just ballooned over 10 years.
I have to say, it just... The film start, for those of you, first of all, I highly recommend it. It's a really well-done documentary. From the get-go, when you get off the plane and your boys run up and hug you, just seeing that emotion, and it only gets worse from there.
It's, that was like, Appleton Airport, too.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It was like, there's so much adversity that happens to you throughout the shooting of the film. I that's why I was like, did they know this was good? Like, it's so crazy that all this happened to the guy they chose. In a way, I felt bad for you because you didn't ask to have a kid. Well, you okayed, obviously, a camera crew, but you couldn't have known any of that was going to happen either. Would you change things if you could?
For 10 years, I had no idea why they were doing it. I'm just like, I just kind of went with it. Would I change? I don't know. I mean, we'll probably get into it. Maybe I can say more of that later.
You can say whatever you want.
Because I have some stuff now that I wouldn't normally have with everything that happened, if that followed.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Sure. I feel bad, though. You said it came out during COVID. Everybody's busy watching Ted Lasso and Tiger King. When you have this great documentary there.
I mean, nobody was going to the movie theaters, so I never had the chance to,
right,
you know, get it out there, I guess.
How invasive was the crew? How often were they there?
So
in your house,
they would call me up and say, hey, what do you got going on for the next month? And they're like, hey, we want to come for a week or 2 weeks. And I'm like, fine. And at first, you know, it's hard. You got new people, you're getting used to the cameras, right, stuff like that. But we got used to it pretty quick. And then now, I mean, fast forward, we're like family. Like if they said, hey, we're coming to Wisconsin, I'm like, I got a bedroom for you. But if there was something that happened and I said no, they were very respectful about not putting some stuff on there. And, you know, when I do watch the documentary, there's some stuff like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have let him do that. Or,
oh, really? Yeah.
Well, there's so many open-ended scenes in that documentary that I love because I have plenty to talk about and I like to talk. But like at the Renaissance Fair, when I proposed to Maria, we're divorced now, but I was one day out of the hospital. I was higher than a kite. I was on Dilaudid, long release morphine, short release morphine. I was higher than a kite, and the guy's like, oh, was it worth it? I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm like, loopier than all get up.
That stuff is strong.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you proposed, that was at a Renaissance Fair.
Yeah, in Sterling, New York.
No kidding.
Yeah. I had it all planned. We picked up Isaac picked me up from the hospital. And we went to Ted's Jewelry in Pulaski, New York. You don't say Pulaski in New York.
Oh, really?
Pulaski.
Good to
spelled
know.
Spelled the same.
I got a bus ticket there tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, and Maria, who became your wife.
Mm-hmm. My third one.
Your third wife.
Yeah. I'm
okay.
Terrible at marriage.
Or you're really good. You love it, though.
I did get
you
three women to say yes.
Yeah, that's impressive.
I mean, you got to stay positive.
Any more in your future?
No.
No?
I have a girlfriend. She's
sure?
pretty awesome.
Okay. You don't want to ruin that by getting
nope,
married.
No, we're never
you're
getting
saying.
Married.
Okay.
She knows
that. So your son, Isaac, was so impressive. I don't want to do any spoiler alerts here, but he was so articulate and thoughtful as a boy when you were going off to fight and when you came back. He just articulated his thoughts so well. He's probably 10, 12 maybe.
He was 12.
Maybe not even,
yeah.
And then at the end of the documentary, he becomes this soldier. And he was so eager to live up to what you had done. Like, you could tell the whole documentary, I'm like, this kid idolizes his father. It was so sweet. He never wanted to leave your side when you were healing. And, but then you see this kind of, he was a little hardened at the end. He's like, I want to go to war. I want to follow in my dad's shoes. What was that like for you watching that? For you to see your son have this character arc over the course of 10 years, was that hard to watch on when you were watching the film?
It was an eye opener.
Yeah. Because
I was hard on him, very hard on him. And, you know, when the documentary came out, they said, don't read the comments. Don't read the comments.
Why?
Or the reviews. Don't ever do it if you ever do it.
Oh, movie. The movie, like from the critics?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I did. But it opened my eyes because I was hard on those boys because I was a single parent, but I was a platoon sergeant in the infantry. I was gone 16, 17 hours a day. So they had to know how to wash their clothes. They had to know how to make their own food, get off the bus by themselves sometimes. You know, they had to. So I was hard on them for a reason. And my squirrel syndrome's kicking in. But with Isaac, you know, it's like he always wanted to impress me. And I'm like, Isaac, you don't have to impress me. I want you to be proud of yourself. You know, and since that documentary's come out, we have expanded so far on that. And I think, you know, he's 26 now. Jeez. And I think he's grown so much that I think he's starting to understand, okay.
Becoming kind of his own,
be my own,
his own
guy.
Path. Yeah. Good for him.
Yeah. And now he lives close to us and he's out of the Army.
Are you saying that the critics were hard on your parenting?
Yes. Very.
That is
very
really
critical.
Mind-boggling. Wow.
Yeah. They said that I didn't love him, that I was too hard on him. Yeah. There's
Some of them are terrible people. I've gotten bad reviews.
Oh, they just don't. They only know what they know. They're looking what they see and making that assumption. And if there's one thing I've learned from watching that documentary, you got to know both sides before you start pointing fingers at people.
I never got that impression like watching it. I thought you were, you know, tough, but not unfair and not unloving. Like
he still owes me $400 too.
That was the joke in the movie when he was 18.
Yeah, but everybody's like, oh, you didn't have any faith that he wasn't going to college. No, I knew what his grade point average was. He wasn't going to, you know, he was terrible at school. And you know what the worst part about disciplining your kids is? You're disciplining yourself because he's just like me. He's terrible at math. Oh. And his grade point wasn't there. I knew he wasn't going to college. He knew he wasn't going to college.
And even though in the film he told you, I'm going to college.
Yeah.
So he was determined.
Are we going to talk about Joey?
Yeah.
The only reason I say that is because he ultimately decided to join the Army because Joey couldn't.
That was heartbreaking too. When he said, and you said, when he left, you said, you're doing this for yourself and Joey, your younger son, who I guess, spoiler alert, we'll just say that you lost your younger son, Joey, while you were in the middle of this documentary. And I mean, I can't even, like, I don't even know what to ask you about that because it's so, what you had been through on your own, what you had seen overseas, what you came back, you had part of your leg amputated from your injuries. Let's just tell people what happened too. You were going to rescue, I said this at the beginning of the show, but basically you were in Afghanistan. You went to rescue an Afghan police, national police officer who had been wounded.
Yep, by an RPG.
You went out to pull him to safety and then you were shot.
Yep.
And you said it felt like a chainsaw going through your legs.
Yeah, snap, snap, burn, chainsaw.
Wow. And then a medic came out.
My medic,
and
Jared
rescued
Craig.
You, Jerry Craig, yeah.
Jared rescued both of us.
How hard is it for you after what you've been through to just to be like glass half full? Like if those bullets had been higher, you might not, there would be no documentary or it would have ended very quickly.
There's a joke to go with that.
Oh, please. If you're going to be the one making it.
So you have all the body armor on, right?
Yeah.
Well, we were in the scout platoon, so we had three sniper teams and two recon teams. So there's 43 of us. We got to move around pretty quickly. So they have these things that look like baseball diamonds that go from your waist almost down to your knees, and they're groin protectors. And I said, guys, take them off, die with some dignity. Well, when I got shot, I was squatted down putting a tourniquet on this Afghan. So I was 4 inches from becoming gender neutral. So, yeah, there's a little running joke with that.
Here I am trying to be all sensitive about this. And
you don't need to be. I'm harder than woodpecker lips.
I wouldn't know, but I'll take your word for it. My guest is former, Army veteran and Bronze Star recipient, Brian Ice. She joins me. He's the subject of the documentary Father, Soldier, Son, which I highly recommend. I just watched it today. It's still very fresh in my mind. When you look back, you said before about the filmmakers, and I've talked to a lot of documentary filmmakers. I have another show I interview them on PBS, and they get so attached to their subjects because they live in, I mean, I don't know how long, maybe not quite as much if they were just coming out for a couple of weeks a year or whatever, but they know their subjects and they feel their subjects. What kind of, you said you have a good relationship with them still.
Absolutely. We talk probably once or twice every couple months. I could pick up my phone right now and call one of them would answer, guaranteed. So great people.
Yeah. Let's talk about your injury. You have a prosthetic now. You had to decide to let them amputate your leg, as I understand it.
Well, when I was wounded, yeah. I got shot 3 times, once in my right leg, twice on my left. I remember on the table, they were like, his foot's cold and dead. We're going to take it. And I was like, you know, I'm a single parent. I need to play with my kids.
Yeah.
A couple days later, I wake up. I still got my leg. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to prove the doctor's wrong. I'm going to run. And then when I didn't, 4 years later, and I was gaining 60 some pounds and just miserable, couldn't walk, you know, more than 15 minutes a day, I finally said, hey, we need to take this. But then I had to prove to the VA doctors why I needed my leg cut off. So that was a year-long process. And then in 2014, I finally got it amputated.
I didn't realize that much time had gone by since the injury and when you decided it. And yep. that was up to you. Mm-hmm. Huh?
I even put a dotted line before they cut. And I just put cut here.
Just to help them out?
Yeah, they didn't think that was funny because then they had to sanitize it.
Oh, Mr. thinks he knows everybody. Knows everything. So what was your life like growing up? You said you grew up in Wautoma.
Nope, my brother lives in Wautoma. Okay. I grew up in Shiocton on the Wolf River. You know, I grew up hunting and fishing with my dad and two older brothers and a twin sister.
Okay.
Mom was an alcoholic and dad was an Outagamie County Sheriff Deputy. So that was an interesting combination.
Yeah, I bet. You have there's a line in the movie where you say, and we'll get into this next, but you say your father wanted somebody to join the military and you were the last.
I was it by default.
How much of that was your dad and how much was it what you really wanted to do?
A lot of it was my dad. He was in the reserves. Grandpa was in, you know, we wanted to keep the lineage going kind of thing. I had a stepbrother later on that would join the Navy. But I mean, I got another joke. Can I crack it?
All right, hold on to that. Okay. We've got more with
bona
fide war hero, Brian Eich is in studio tonight here on Nightlight. Great to have everybody with me. Keep those texts coming. Who's the greatest American songwriter? And if you have a question for Brian, don't hesitate to ask that as well. This is Peach Wabba and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Into my own parade, cast your dance and spill my way. I promise to go under it.
Bear. Asking the question tonight, who's the greatest American songwriter? It's Bob Dylan's birthday. And you can let us know on the stream at 85 or on the text line at 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. My guest is Brian Eich. He is I keep calling you a bona fide war hero.
Yeah, stop doing that.
I know, but you are.
No, I'm not.
And you must know it. No.
Nope. I think okay. I did what anybody else would do if
do,
they were
huh?
in my position.
Not me. I would have ran
the other
way.
We don't leave our friendlies behind.
Oh, that's very impressive. And Bronze Star, how did you, are you in touch with the guy you tried to save in any way? Or?
So, no, I don't even know his name.
Okay.
All I know is like 4 or 5 years later, I was told that he was alive. He was very grateful. And he was the police chief's secretary, and he was missing an eye.
Oh, boy. From that incident?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
But who knows? You know, yeah. We pulled out of there. Who knows if he's still alive?
You mentioned a scene in the movie where you're trying to get a snowblower. I think the prosthetic was pretty new at the time.
Very
you
new.
Learning how to do everything. You were pulling a snowblower up onto
took me
a
over
truck.
An hour.
Oh, God. It was hard to watch. I'm like, why are they showing us this? Is he going to lose the prosthetic here? I was really like, oh, no.
It was like my third day back after having a prosthetic after amputation. Wow. So I didn't really know how to use it. And I don't know if you saw it, kept getting caught in the grate. And I was in a lot of pain, but I was like, I'm not getting beat up. And everybody's like, you know, why didn't you just drive it on? It's a motorized snowblower. I'm like, because it was broke. I was taking it to the Mennonite guy. To get fixed.
Who's the Mennonite guy?
They're like Amish, but they can drive.
Oh, I know what a Mennonite is.
Oh, he's a small engine repair guy.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
But it's like the guy charges you like nothing. There's no labor rate. It's whatever the part is. That's what he charges you.
So it was worth trying to
it's ridiculously
pull the thing
worth
up.
It. Yeah, it was awesome.
You didn't drop many F-bombs in the film. I take that back. There's a few, but I was like, how are there not more? Just because of what you went through with your rehab and with everything.
When I do public speaking, I tell them, I'm like, I'm going to I'm going to cuss. And but I try to keep it to a minimum only when I need to, you know, get something across.
Really make a point.
Break out the knife hand or something.
So you
like
said
that.
Also your youngest son, Joey, duck hunting. There was a joke behind that.
Yeah, he went in the documentary. He's out duck hunting with Grandpa. And Grandpa lives in Crivets now. But he says, what a fungawi is he smelling the shotgun shell. And the joke behind that is if you're in the African jungle at midnight and you listen really close, if you're out in the middle of the jungle, all of a sudden you hear, where the F are we? But at the time, in Joey's defense, he didn't know the joke. He just funny. Knew it was the what a fungawi tribe.
That's very sweet. Yeah. Sweet moment. there's a point, Brian, in the film where you say you're asking, who are you? You were this fun dad who played with airsoft guns and squirt guns with your mm-hmm. boys. And this is, I think, before you lost Joey, you're like, who am I? What I think is so remarkable about the film is for everything you went through, at least on film, in the movie, you seem like the same guy. You came out on the other end of all of that. I'm sure it changed you. But are you the same guy or who are you? Did you find out?
Well, first of all, I call that documentary my upside down roller coaster. And I'm, you know, because most people, when they're going down on the roller coaster, that's the fun part. For me, it wasn't fun going down. I don't like it down there. It's very dark. It's a bad, yeah. bad. I don't like the darkness. I'm looking up from now on. Okay. But I'm thankful for it because I used it as like school. You know, it taught wow. me a lot about myself. So yeah. I saw a lot. And I said, you know, I'm on the upswing from what it's been 14 years now. But when I was at my lowest was towards the end of that documentary, 2018, 2019. I had gained like 70 some pounds. I didn't want to do anything. I'd take a shower every 2-3 days, just didn't care. And then I watched it again. I've only watched it 4 or 5 times total. Okay. But like the 4th or 5th time I watched it, I got 2 things out of it. One, Isaac said he couldn't make any friends because he moved all the time. Mm. And Joey was crying. And he said, I could be a better wrestler if my dad could get on the mat with me. So that's when I finally said, you know what? When we moved to Wisconsin, we moved to Luxembourg Casco for little Joey, I do it all the time. Jackson.
Yeah.
He's 7 now. Okay. But we moved here for him to be in a good wrestling school. And Luxembourg Casco has been absolutely amazing with us.
So Jackson is your son with Maria, who you got yep. married to during the documentary. You had yes. another son, Jackson, when Isaac had gone and enlisted in the service. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was nice too when you sent him the pictures and he yep. looked very it's got to be strange. I mean, you're wearing all of this on your sleeve. Everyone is experiencing this or looking in at your life. Does that ever get to you?
Well, there's a lot of laundry out there. Yeah, everybody knows about me. I get people all the time come up, "Hey, how you doing? Who the heck are you?"
Right.
Like, I don't know who you are, and sorry, I meet too many people.
So okay, so you mentioned 2018, 2019 was your low point. What turned it around for you? What started to get you back on track?
Watching it that 4th or 5th time. And you know, when you watch a movie a second time, you catch something you'd missed before.
Right.
And it's like a light switch just clicked on. It's like, I need to be there for Jackson. So one, Isaac's mad because Jackson can get away with murder. Like, I'm so easy on that kid. I'm like, you want to go out and play in the mud? That's what washing machines are for. I don't care.
Right.
Like, go ahead. Oh, you don't want this? Don't eat it. Just, you want chicken nuggets? I'll get you chicken nuggets. Yeah. I got to work on that. Girlfriends helped me with that. But no, it told me that I'm going to be on that wrestling mat with Jackson, and whatever school Jackson starts school in, he's staying in. So we're okay. not leaving Luxembourg. I just bought a house a month ago, and I've lost in the past year and a half, I've lost 63 pounds and I feel flipping amazing. And it's just like, all right, here we go. Now it's time to move forward. We're going to keep this train
good
moving.
For you were jogging in the film, trying to jog with a prosthetic, and it was difficult and it hurt. Has that gotten better? Did you
okay
you lost
so
weight a different
I'm
way?
I'm 49 years old. I don't need to run anymore. I'm good. I'm over that. I'm
that's
over
why you
it.
Have a car.
I just do fishing. Yeah. Okay. I'll stick to fishing. But so that prosthetic was just, it was aligned wrong.
Oh, okay.
That is what I'm learning now from my new prosthetist down, oh, wow. David Rotter in Chicago. It was not meant, it wasn't aligned right to run. Okay. But if I needed to run, this is what they call a modified blade. I could run in this if I want.
Really? Wow, isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So there's been a ton of advancements in that field too, right? I mean.
Oh, yeah. I have a college I talked to out in Oregon, a prosthetics college, that they're trying to, I talked to them on Zoom for the They watch my documentary, and then we do a Zoom call every year for his class. So cool. But he's trying to do osseointegration. You ever heard of that?
No. Can you tell us about it? Can you stick around for a few minutes?
Absolutely.
All right, perfect. Brian's not going anywhere. He's sticking around, and he's going to stay with us through hour number two. How do you feel about that, Amanda?
I'm more than good with that.
All right, me too.
It's a fascinating story.
Absolutely. We're just getting started. This is Pete Schwab and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network. Holiday weekend, everybody.
My mama told me, she said, son, please beware. There's this thing called love, and it's everywhere.